And welcome back to Push to Talk here in this Saturday morning with Magneto Mel. I am sitting here with NATCA Representative Darren Gaines, and we're also joined by Lutz Pritchoff, who's been sort of representing the European faction to the best of his ability. Good morning, Lutz.
Hi, Mel. How are you doing?
Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
So we were talking about modernization here, and I was about to ask Darren a question of how the expanding global community is playing into the U.S.'s efforts in this modernization, and I wouldn't mind hearing.
Well, the funny thing,
European as well.
Funny thing is, I was recently at our academy, and I walked into the room, and there was a whole lot of FAA people, and they actually had Next Gen up on the screen. So they, despite the fact that they haven't got it figured out here yet, they're already busy selling it to us. So that was quite interesting, and I was going to say, well, do you guys really know what Next Gen is? But it's being pushed out there, and Next Gen is already in Germany, and we're basically, well, I hope we're not going to buy into it because we don't really know what we're buying into. But we do have one of the people who works for the company has a, we have a permanent posting at the FAA, and so we're pretty much in the loop on these things. I think modernization in Europe is not so much about equipment, it's about getting a single airspace. That's the big buzzword for European modernization. It's the famous, we have 63 centers, and we've got, upteen different systems that don't necessarily always speak to each other. And one of the big problems we have is, for instance, I work next to the French, Durance ACC, I work next to Zurich ACC, we have Praha ACC in the Czech Republic, we have the Danish guys in the north, we have the Belgians. So we're talking about 5-6 different countries who have different political agendas. They buy different equipment. The equipment doesn't necessarily always gel. And there's a problem there. Just getting the equipment to talk to each other and not even going down the modernization route, because from a modernization point of view, the equipment we actually have, the center that I work in is pretty much one of the most modern centers that we have in Europe at the moment, despite the fact that it was built in the 90s. But certainly, our big buzzword is getting the airspace organized, and what you'll hear is functional airspace blocks. Excuse me. And the functional airspace blocks is to try and get big blocks of airspace to work the sectors, the airplanes, that the direction they're flying in, and have them in one airspace. And of course, Europe being what it is and the political agendas being what they are, the big problem is getting everybody in the boat and getting everybody to say, well, we can understand that we have to release some of our airspace to somebody else. Now, Germany, in that way, is we've actually done that. We have in southern Germany, we have a big block that we've actually released, for instance, to Zurich, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to operate the airport, because the German border's 6 miles from touchdown at Zurich Airport. We have a big problem with the French, for instance, where we ideally need to have a big block of airspace controlled by one unit. Now, it doesn't have to be a German or a French unit, but it needs to be one unit. So you'll hear buzzwords like CESAR and functional airspace blocks. And I think it's the same thing as Next Gen. It gets talked about a lot. There's a political will, and there's certainly a political drive at the moment, especially with the recession that we're having. The airlines are complaining that they're spending lots of money flying routings that are unnecessary. And we still have national boundaries that basically separate us from the airspaces are separated by national boundaries and not necessarily by traffic boundaries the way they should be. So our big thing would be to get the functional airspace blocks going, and then it's going to be a case of to decide who's going to work them. And really, at the end of the day, and we had this the other day on the radio, it's all about money. It's about who gets billed, who gets to make the money. And that's what the real problem is. The problem isn't so much the sovereignty. It's all about getting the airway set up in such a way that the finances are distributed evenly and that everybody gets their piece of the action. And I think that's the main concern, especially with the smaller countries like Luxembourg, Belgium, you know, that don't have such big airspaces. But the whole satellite next-gen thing that's being pushed here, I'm not, as Darren said earlier on, I'm not quite sure exactly what next-gen is supposed to be. And certainly in Europe, there's not a big impact in that way.
Well, Darren, what would be the domestic perspective on the global players in terms of modernization of the system?
We actually, United States of America runs the most traffic of any national airspace service provider that there is. So one of the problems that we see when the FAA starts modeling our airspace is after the airspace in Canada and Europe, and they look at Eurocontrol and other places as well. And we're saying that those probably aren't good models to look at for every aspect, because the traffic counts just aren't the same. We move lots and lots of traffic through our space with some pretty major hub systems, and the Europeans and the Canadians and all the other models out there just don't compare to the traffic levels and the volume that we see here. So we do see those comparisons made, and my big thing with that is nobody else does it quite like we do it here. They do a lot of things better in other places as well, as far as their procurement of equipment. Some countries out there in Europe have much better technology than we have here, that we're, due to the bureaucracy and the political issues, aren't able to acquire here in a timely manner. So we are behind in the technology from Europe, but I think we are ahead of the game as far as the traffic complexity and the volume levels. We need to keep that in perspective and keep that in-house.
Well, now, one of the things that Lutz mentioned was a problem with a unified airspace. And even when you're doing transcontinental, or not just transcontinental, but overseas flights, mm-hmm. you've got a need to integrate what's coming from. So right. How is that working together? I mean, the systems still have to play together, even if one is ahead
sure.
of the other.
Sure. Yeah, aviation is a global enterprise. And ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, is the governing body of global aviation. And you are seeing that the FAA is coming into compliance with more and more ICAO initiatives, because we recognize that, hey, this is a global enterprise, and we do need to do things, I say we, the world collectively, in a similar fashion. We're all on the same page as far as language issues and weather dissemination issues and procedural issues and many, many things, because it's very difficult to fly from one state, meaning country, to another state, and have to keep changing the way that you do things. It can be very confusing for everybody, the controllers, the pilots, everybody involved. So we do need to streamline globally into an international standard, and we at the FAA United States, we are doing that. We are taking on more and more ICAO global initiatives all the time to come into compliance with the way the rest of the world does things.
And if the two of you can maybe help share with us a little bit, what is the difference between these ICAO initiatives and, say, what the U.S. has been operating on? How different is it? How much of a push does it take to adopt these?
Well, like I said, the ICAO is part of the UN, the United Nations, and they are a very powerful entity, and one that we agreed through a treaty, so to speak, to comply with the initiatives of ICAO.
Well, aside some
of the
from things, phraseology.
Well, there's phraseology. There's the way that we disseminate weather. We do file sometimes exceptions to the way ICAO does things, but like we give visibility in statute miles. They do it differently, in some other parts of the world. We give a ceiling in feet, and they do it in other measurements in some other parts of the world. But some of the acronyms, so like when a pilot receives NOTAMs, we're adjusting some of the acronyms in the NOTAM dissemination list to be compatible with, for example, like we now call airports aerodromes, because that's the ICAO initiative. We no longer call them airports, now they're called aerodromes. The way that pilots file flight plans, the equipment suffix, like if you have GPS or you're reduced vertical separation qualified, or you're a heavy aircraft, there's new identifiers for those aircraft in flight plan filing. That's another example of how we are taking on ICAO initiatives to come into compliance with the way the rest of the world does things.
And that sounds like something that pilots would need to get up to speed on when we do your call-in. So how do we change ages at this point of operating system here in the U.S. that people are very comfortable with, and
you're right.
Been doing for a long time.
For the pilots that have been in the system a long time, it is a culture change, it is a paradigm shift, and it is something that they need to get adequate training on. It's not something that you can just read a memo on and take care of it. In the airline in world, they have dispatchers that can oversee a lot of that need to be trained as appropriate, and the pilots need to be familiar with that as well, because a lot of times we see in the flight plan issue, pilots are flying flight plans with an equipment suffix that isn't compatible with ICAO. We go to ask them what they really are, and they really don't have any idea. They got to go call company, call dispatch, talk about it. So there is a misconnect with the pilots in the way that we're now filing flight plans. We see that for the new pilots that are just coming on board, learning it. Hopefully, it's being taught to them right out the door, right out the gate, the right way to do it. So it's not a big issue for them. They're learning for the first time, but anybody with several years experience may have to relearn an old skill.
Exactly. We're going to take a quick break right now, and you are listening to EAA Radio. This is Magneto Mel with Push to Talk in our ATC Hour. Darren Gaines and Lutz Prichoff, and we'll be right back after this break.